Well, hello there. Welcome into another edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you are well, that you and yours are well, that you had a good weekend and that your Monday was good. And my apologies for not being here yesterday. Yesterday was weird. Around our place, yesterday started about 3 a.m. I woke up at just right at 3 o'clock, realizing that my CPAP wasn't working. And for those of you who live with using a CPAP every night, you know that if the power goes off and that thing stops pumping air, you wake up wondering why you can't breathe. and that was the case last night. Or not last night, but night before last. I woke up at 3 a.m. wondering why I couldn't breathe. I rolled over and noticed that the light coming from the CPAP machine was not on. Also, the light from my phone charger was not on. And I noticed that the other half of the room was lit up. And I rolled over and saw that my wife had her phone up and was looking at her phone for some reason. I think she was looking at her phone to see what time it was. And I rolled back over and tapped my watch. And if you're an Apple Watch user, you know that you can, if you've got it on the charger, you can just tap it and it'll show you what time it is in big green numbers. And it's just a touch after 3 a.m. And everything is totally quiet. And that's another thing, because we run a little thing with the sound of surf in the background. Something that I got used to years ago, working student conferences and being in the same hotel as lots of rowdy students. You learn to run some background noise because the students tend to get loud. And if you're going to get up way before those guys do in the morning and go tend to things and make sure everything is set up so that they'll have good sessions early in the morning, then you got to find ways to sleep. So the surf noise was not running. And the power's off. And after laying there for about an hour trying to sleep, I got up. So I was up from 3 o'clock on, and we didn't get power back until late in the morning yesterday. So it was a bizarre start of the day. And I had no access to any way to do anything as far as a podcast was concerned, unless I did it from my phone, which, no. I can think of some rare instances when I might do that, but that's not one of them. So I just put up on Facebook, no podcast. Sorry about that, guys. And what do? There you have it. You just do what you can, and and that's it. And I just actually, right before we got started here today, I was still trying to recover computer-wise from things that were happening. And I'm just like, well, why is this happening? Can somebody, would you please tell me why? I just want to know why is this happening? And I was not able to find out why. Anyway, I got everything up and running, and the computer is not generating the playlist it's supposed to. So literally the music started for this particular podcast, and I was still focused on getting the playlist, everything done together as it should have been. And in fact, I just now, as we've been speaking, as I've been bumbling around here, I've been in the background, click, 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 type, click, 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 getting Facebook Live up and running. So now Facebook Live, 4.5 minutes into the podcast, Facebook Live is now up and running. So yes, I could have done it yesterday, I guess, but I had a session yesterday afternoon, and after the session yesterday afternoon, there was nothing else that really got accomplished as far as my studio was concerned. So, that's just how life went yesterday. But we're back up and running today. Everything seems to be okay. I obviously have some things to take care of when we get finished with this today, because for some reason, my scheduler is not scheduling. So I had to manually pull things together for today. It'll be a bit different, but if you're a podcast subscriber, you won't know. It's just the people who are listening or watching live will know. And since I just got started, that means that not many people are. Oh, man, what a weird life we live. That's actually kind of catches you up. The weekend was uneventful. We had a lot of rain, and so there was not much going on around our place. I had done as much yard work as I could before the rain came in, so there was none of that over the weekend. Did some stuff. Got up early Saturday morning and had breakfast with my buddy Mike, and we went scavenging at thrift stores and found nothing to take home. Nothing needed to go home with us Saturday. And although there was... there's this table saw I've been looking at, and I keep telling myself, man, that's cheap, especially now they've got it. It's like 35% off or something like that. 30, or is it half off? It's half off of $75. And I took a closer look at it and decided against it because it's got some issues. I would have to do a lot of repairing and buying replacement parts. And aside from that, I don't really have anywhere to put it right now. So that was that. Anyway, that's it. And we have all been, you know, we've all been kind of paying attention to what's happened since the end of the RNC convention. The RNC, that the C is convention, since the Republican convention. And it's interesting now that since the convention, polling numbers are showing that Americans are unhappy with the violence going on in Democrat-led cities, in Democrat-led states. And the Democrats have turned around and decided, well, we've been ignoring this all this time. We haven't spoken a word about it. We won't say anything about it. We're just kind of not acknowledging it. The only way we will acknowledge it is to encourage people to send money to help bail these violent people out of jail. Thanks, Kamala Harris. And so let's just ignore it like it doesn't exist because it's very inconvenient for our cause. Until it turns out that people don't like it. And the polls are at the point now where they can't deny it. And so now they're condemning it. And they're blaming the Trump administration. They're blaming President Trump for all of the violence in all these cities. Which, on the surface, just at face value, is ludicrous. Because if you've watched any of the footage, there is so much cell phone footage that's on social media today. If you've watched any of the cell phone footage, and it's not cell phone footage posted by conservative people. This is cell phone footage posted by anti-American, liberal, leftist, progressive people. These people who are anarchists in the street, they're posting cell phone video celebrating everything they're doing. And you see the people screaming death to America, and you see the people screaming F Trump, and you see all of this anti-American stuff, and it's all focused and pointed towards President Trump. But somehow these are Trump's people. The talking points have obviously gone out. Because now the pundits on the talking head shows are even saying, well, these are Trump supporters. These people are all Trump supporters. And if Trump would just tell these people to go home, they would. Which is just absolutely ludicrous. It's just insane. And we'll look at a bit of that as we press forward today. Because it has to be looked at. The Democrats are so transparently corrupt that it boggles the mind. I guess that's the best way to put it, because I'm having trouble coming up with the right words to say about how obviously corrupt this actually is. What's actually happening? Because we're watching this violence in cities go on. We're watching Democrats encourage people to give to funds to bail these violent protesters, rioters, out of jail. We're watching all of this happen. It's right there out in the open. And then they turn around. It's almost like somebody turned a page in a book. And on the next book, the story has completely changed. The plot line has completely changed. Everything from before that is denied and not even acknowledged. And we're expected to just accept this blindly. And as far as I'm concerned, it just means the Democrats are desperate, they're flailing. They're trying to get some sort of a grip on the situation. The only way they can see to get any kind of grip on the situation is to do what they usually do, which is blame the orange man because the orange man is bad. It's just nuts. And that's what's going on. Let's see, in the news, we're going to look at something today that up to 90% of COVID-positive Americans were possibly not even contagious. But we shut America down anyway. A lot of people had a gut feeling that this was way, way, way overblown, even before we started seeing the evidence that it was way overblown. And now we're seeing the reports coming in that we were right. And I have an observation. New case and death numbers for coronavirus are dropping. Projections of the increase in cases after large gathering events are not panning out. In other words, when the news media and the talking heads are all squawking about how anytime there's a large Trump gathering or for example, the final night, the Thursday night of the convention, that those people weren't social distancing and they weren't wearing masks and we're all going to die. They're just going to spread this disease everywhere. Trump wants everybody to die. And in Sturgis, when the big Sturgis motorcycle rally was held in the last few weeks, there were 200 and something thousand people there. And they all just said, well, forget this. I'm not wearing a mask. And they were all not socially distancing. And they were all just enjoying life like it was a normal Sturgis get together. They said there would be thousands of cases to come up after that. And the number that we have is 26 cases after Sturgis. Recent revelations show us that 90% of those infected have been asymptomatic and not spreading the virus. As time passes, it's becoming increasingly obvious we are not only definitely on the downhill side of the pandemic, but it looks like we've been scammed. But Joe Biden, before he came out of his bunker, said he would shut the country down in the event of a second wave of the virus. He would do what has damaged our country again, learning nothing from the past. The news media still breathlessly reports new case numbers, and they're downplaying positive developments. You don't see news about positive developments. They're downplaying the positive developments. The Democrats have issued talking points, blaming President Trump for over 180,000 deaths. You saw this happen when Joe Biden spoke yesterday. He compared it to more people dying than have died in all the wars we've been in combined. What he doesn't give you is context. The numbers of people in America who die of various things every year. If you go look at those comparison charts, you'll see that even with 180-something thousand deaths, it doesn't rank at the top or near it. But this is their talking point. So they obviously intend to blame President Trump for every COVID-related issue, regardless of the fact that every one of those problems has happened in states and cities run by them. Democrats. All of them. New York with the nursing home deaths. California, which is now, it's become a dictatorship. It is obvious to me that the Democrats plan to use their failed coronavirus response against President Trump to damage his reelection chances, as well as the violence in their cities. So, as we get closer to Election Day in November, November 3rd, don't be surprised when the Democrats stage, as they usually do, an October surprise. Sometime in the month of October, in the weeks leading up to Election Day. Don't be surprised if we see some amazing surge in coronavirus cases. Some kind of report damaging the White House, the Trump administration, something. Don't be surprised if they use the coronavirus against President Trump in one last failed effort to undermine his chances of winning. Don't be surprised. I believe it's going to happen. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. This Tuesday, September 1st edition for the year 2020. Do you remember when it was like love was changing the minds tonight. My. While chasing the clouds away. You know, I mentioned before the break, I believe that there will be a September surprise. Or October surprise. Sorry, got September on the brain. And, well, come on. It's Earth, Wind, and Fire. It's September, yeah. But I do believe there will be. I do believe that there's a strong possibility that there will be another fright, that they will attempt to frighten America in October, because they have seen how successful frightening Americans has been. And I think if that's not the main thing, I think it will be one of the things they do. And that is one, this is so weird, and please follow me in this, but the reason that I think that's happening is one of the reasons I'm actually planning a vacation the first week of November, because I have a feeling that there's going to be this huge scare and that people are going to be frightened and they're all going to stay home. And that when my wife and I go off on vacation, where we go will be pretty much empty. And we'll have it to ourselves. Except for other people who are like, what? So, anyway, that's just me. Yeah, that's just how I think. Well, Creepy Uncle Joe came out of the basement yesterday. Did you actually see the photos? I posted the photos on social media yesterday, where he showed up and he made a speech, and there was nowhere anywhere near him. When the speech was finished, he took no questions, which seems to be the pattern. He's not taking questions. Kamala's not taking questions. They're not talking to the press. And he was obviously reading every word, most every word. When I went for my session yesterday afternoon, for my recording session yesterday afternoon, as I passed through the offices to go to the studio, they had one of the big screen televisions on the speech, and they were watching Joe Biden's speech. And I walked by and then walked back kind of up to one side of the group that was watching. And I said, wow, look at his eyes, because it was obvious. He's turning his face. He's making expressions. He's looking apparently in different directions as he speaks, but his focus is in one spot. It's on one spot. So he had a teleprompter, a big one, somewhere in the distance, and he was reading every word. And he's good at acting out what he reads, but he was still on a script. And this is something I've said since the day he announced, was that he would have a team of people surrounding him. He would have people whose jobs were to keep him on script and to keep him from touching people. Well, COVID has taken care of the touching people part. I mean, he's walking around in masks and not touching anybody, he's doing these interviews where it looks like he's a football field away from the interviewer when they show the two shots. It's some bizarre stuff. And wearing that black mask that he wears all over the place. I mean, come on, color coordinate. There's stuff out there. Go to VeraBradley.com, get you some colorful masks there, Uncle Joe. Get something. You can have options, you know. You don't have to have that ominous black mask, which looks like something to protect us from the black plague. Anyway, Uncle Joe, in his speech, is claiming the president is trying to leverage unrest in several U.S. cities to his political advantage. During the speech, addressing ongoing violence across the country, which, by the way, he had nothing to say about until the polls came out, showing that people aren't happy. So now that they have stuck their finger in the wind and figured out which direction the wind is blowing, Uncle Joe comes out of the basement and makes a speech. Well, he slammed President Trump's leadership. He said, the simple truth is Donald Trump failed to protect America, so now he's trying to scare America. Now, he's trying to tie two things together there. He's trying to tie the COVID-19 response to the riots. And may I remind you that the COVID-19 response and the riots have both been Democrat boondoggles, both of them. Because the places in America hardest hit by COVID-19 are all under Democrat control. And where the violence is, again, under Democrat control. He continued to slam Trump's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's led to more than 183,000 deaths. He also slammed Trump's handling of the economic recession and noted that the virus has complicated plans for schools to reopen for in-person learning in the fall. Well, the economic recession happened because of COVID-19, not because of President Trump. In fact, our economic situation before COVID-19 was amazing. The biggest bounce back, the biggest growth spurt, the most job creation. It was amazing. And then certain people realized they could frighten America into staying home and shut it all down. And they did. So the job losses, nothing that he's talking about blaming Trump for here is actually Trump's fault. And even right now, the stock market is bouncing back like crazy. And the stock market is based on predictions of how America is going to turn. And America is beginning to bounce back. And because America is beginning to bounce back, the progressives have to offer their alternate universe view of things and talk about gloom and doom. As far as complicating plans for schools to reopen for in-person learning this fall, what's complicating those plans is not the coronavirus, and it's not the Trump administration, and it's not Donald Trump. It's teachers' unions. That's what's keeping schools from reopening in the fall. It's the widespread fit pitching of teachers' unions, combined with the fact that a lot of teachers are actually involved in the protests, the riots. Just go look around. You'll see. He also said, and since they have no agenda or vision for a second term, Trump and Pence are running on this. You won't be safe in Joe Biden's America. Really? They have no agenda? So what I saw published just last week was not the agenda? What was that then? That was no vision for a second term? What was that then? He goes on to say, and what's their proof? The violence you're seeing in Donald Trump's America. These are not images from some imagined Joe Biden's America in the future. These are images from Donald Trump's America today. No, actually, these are images coming from Democrat-controlled cities in Democrat-controlled states who have refused aid from Donald Trump's America to end the violence. They have said, no, 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 we don't want your help. In fact, the mayor of Portland has said, yeah, well, we just want this to burn out. It'll burn out on its own. Burn's a good word, mayor. It's a very appropriate word. Because that couple of hundred people in your city of 2.5 million, most of which are not from Portland or even Oregon, they've traveled there to cause trouble. Most of those people don't even reside in your state, sir. Those people don't care about your people. They don't care about what's proper and right. They just want to burn things and hurt people. And they've proven so by killing somebody. Somebody they chased down and identified to each other as, hey, we got one here. We got a Trump supporter over here. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for Tuesday, September 1, 2020. Wow, September already. Time flies. I'll forget the rest of it. I'm talking about Joe Biden and what he had to say yesterday. It just amazes me. Some have said, and they are correct, that Joe Biden's speech was possibly the most disingenuous speech in the history of politics. It was so filled with misrepresentations and lies. It was absolutely incredible in that sense. And he charged that despite President Trump's assertion that if only he was president, it wouldn't happen. There's unrest and violence in several U.S. cities. Those are all Democrat-led cities, as I said, which have refused help from President Trump. He went on to say he sees an opportunity for real progress on the issues of race and police reform and justice being put to the test. But Donald Trump looks at this violence and sees a political lifeline. He said the president's rooting for chaos and violence, which goes completely against what he keeps saying. He publicly keeps saying the absolute opposite of that. And his actions are the exact opposite of that. Like I've told you before, people in politics say a lot. Look at what they actually do. Joe Biden's been in politics for 50 years. He was in the Senate for 47. If he could have made changes to America, which would have helped us, he had 47 years to get that done, and he didn't. And remember, never forget this. The only reason that Joe Biden came out of his hidey hole yesterday and spoke was because the polls said he had to. It wasn't because there's some noble, righteous, moral reason to do so. The polls said he had to. And so, those surrounding him, those managing every word he says through that teleprompter, all decided what we have to do is blame all the stuff that the people are unhappy with on President Trump. They don't like it? Well, it's his fault then. And it's not just Joe, it's everybody around him, his supporters. They're accusing Trump of fomenting violence. On Sunday, Biden's deputy campaign manager, Kate Bedingfield, said the former VP has shown strong leadership and accused Trump of fanning the flames of violence. She said, it's exactly the opposite of what we've been seeing from Trump, who's been trying to incite violence this entire summer. When she said that, Chris Wallace actually lost his train of thought. He stumbled over what he had to say because what she said was so absurd. And she doubled down on it when he questioned her on it, that he was fanning the flames of violence. If you're a parent, you understand what it's like to tell your kids no. And if you have a strong-willed, stubborn kid, you tell that kid no, they're reaching for something that you don't want them to break, and you say, no, don't touch that. What do? They move closer. And sometimes they will pick up what you've told them not to touch, and they will break it. They will throw it to the floor. I'll show you. And what we have happening right now in cities, Democrat-controlled cities in Democrat-controlled states across America, is people who don't like to be told no. It's amazing. And Joe Biden also had things to say about COVID. This is part of what he had to say.
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. You think about it. More lives this year than any other year for the past 100 years.
What? What was that, Joe? Say that again.
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. You think about it. More lives this year than any other year for the past 100 years.
Joe Biden, during yesterday's Groundhog Day speech, spoke those words. He said those words, and I can only imagine one of two things has happened. He either was ad-libbing, he strayed from the teleprompter, or he lost his place, and the teleprompter kept moving. Either way, if he lost his place, that's one thing, but he listened. If you lose your place and this is how you recover.
COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. You think about it. More lives this year than any other year for the past 100 years.
This is clearly a stat he was supposed to have memorized. It was a stat he was supposed to know. Possibly a stat on the screen of the teleprompter that went by and he just spaced on it. Either way, his recovery of what he had to say illustrates a problem many people have been talking about. And that is that Joe Biden has some problems. He has some issues. Is this who you want negotiating with foreign powers? Is this the same person who's gotten in the face of citizens at public appearances in the last year, calling them dog-faced pony soldiers and the like? Is this man is who you want dealing with the powers around the world that present a threat? This is who you want? I think not. There is definitely an issue, definitely a serious problem. And we do not need to elect that problem into the Oval Office. There are many, many who say that if he is elected, that Kamala Harris will be the president at some very near point in the future. I see that as a distinct possibility. It really could happen. Because you look at what's happening with Joe right now. Just this example is one of many. And you know, he's not somebody who can serve at that level with that capacity, that diminished capacity, and the responsibility placed in the hands of somebody at that position. No. It's not going to happen. If Kamala Harris ends up in the White House, in the Oval Office, God help the United States of America. Because she is rabidly leftist. She has been encouraging people to support financially, bailing the people out who have been arrested for burning buildings in these riot-torn cities. We certainly don't need anyone like her in charge. Because progressives in charge aren't good for America. They're not good for their people. Here's an example. Did you hear about the mayor of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? Yeah, people are kind of hacked off at the guy now. The reason is that a photo has emerged of Philadelphia's mayor in Maryland dining indoors. Why is that a problem? Well, I can dine indoors here in my area. I did so yesterday. I had lunch on my way to my session yesterday, sat at a table inside where they mark off every other table to separate people. Some places are being creative about how they do that, some taking all half the tables out, others just piling all kinds of junk on the table so nobody will be seated in those tables. But Philadelphia's mayor was in Maryland, had a sit down in a Maryland restaurant, while his city's restaurants are only permitted to serve customers outside. Jim Kennedy, that's his name. He posted on Instagram, his image was posted on Instagram by restaurateur Mark Vetri. The image was taken on Sunday in the Chesapeake Bay region of Maryland. The caption said, "Glad you're enjoying indoor dining with no social distancing or mask wearing in Maryland tonight, while restaurants here in Philly close, suffer, and fight for every nickel just to survive. I guess all your press briefings and your narrative of unsafe indoor dining don't apply to you. Thank you for clearing it all up for us tonight." You see, indoor dining in the Philadelphia area is set to resume at 25% capacity a week from today. Outdoor dining returned there in June after restaurants were shut down because of the coronavirus. But indoor dining has been permitted elsewhere. In Pennsylvania. He says, "Yeah, I know some folks are upset that I dined indoors at a restaurant in Maryland. I felt the risk was low because the county I visited has fewer than 800 COVID-19 cases compared to over 3,300 cases. Bull, 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 bull. You didn't look at stats before. You honestly expect us to believe that you sat down and looked at COVID-19 stats before you made a decision about where you were going to make a sit down for a meal? You expect us to believe that? I'm sorry, sir. You expect too much." You're listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast. For Tuesday, the first day of September 2020. I'm just kind of scanning stats here during the break over at worldometers or worldometers.info, which is a really interesting site for gathering information about all kinds of different things. And they have on their front page, on the main page, you can scroll down towards the bottom and you have the health stats. Now, first let me go over here. They have a dedicated coronavirus page, okay? And the coronavirus page lists worldwide, this is worldwide numbers, 855,652 deaths, which they attribute to coronavirus. And I say it that way, that they attribute it to coronavirus because... Well, just because it's, I don't think that all of the deaths are directly related, because we found out here just in the last few days that there is the comorbidity factor, and that really only roughly 6% of all of the deaths in the country, in the U.S., are directly caused solely, only by coronavirus, and the rest had comorbidities. Now, I understand that, yes, there would be some in weakened conditions who coronavirus would tip them over the edge. But I still think there's more to know about this. And I think that some people have taken political advantage. And as a result, we have damaged our nation in a really, really bad way. As of right now, in the United States of America, 187,793 people have passed away. And, of course, that number is constantly changing. And the number recovered, this is a number you never hear talked about. In the United States of America, 3,457,318. Almost 3.5 million people have recovered. You don't ever hear, never hear about that number. You also don't hear that around the world, people are dying from other things at much, much higher rates. I suggest you go to worldometers.com and have a look. It's very enlightening, very interesting. The vast majority of the nearly 6 million coronavirus diagnoses in the United States likely weren't contagious, according to the New York Times. Despite continued widespread COVID-19 panic, which includes many virus-related restrictions, up to 90% of individuals who've tested positive for COVID-19 potentially carried such insignificant amounts of the virus, they weren't really contagious. The most widely used diagnostic test for COVID-19 is called the PCR test. According to the FDA, the PCR test tests for the virus's genetic material. The problem with this test is that it only reports the presence of the genetic material being searched. It doesn't report the amount of the genetic material, just that it's there. That means individuals with such insignificant levels of COVID-19 genetic material will still test positive, even if they aren't really sick. According to the New York Times, the PCR test amplifies genetic matter from the virus in cycles. The fewer cycles required, the greater the amount of the virus or viral load. Does that make sense to you? I mean, they do it in cycles, and the fewer times they do it, they have to do it to find the virus. That means there's a much larger amount of it in the system. That kind of makes sense, right? If it goes for one pass, one cycle, and you find the virus, that means, oh, there's a lot. And if you have to go through 10 cycles, it means there's not much. See what I mean? Now, an epidemiologist at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health named Dr. Michael Mina said testing thresholds are currently too sensitive. He told the Times that the problem is like finding an individual hair in a room long after the person who is responsible for dropping that strand of hair has gone. So, the way we're testing now is showing a lot more positive hits than it needs to, than we should be looking at. Because if 90% of the people who have tested positive really weren't sick and weren't transmitting to other people, then we've done a lockdown based on misinformation, misunderstanding information. And some have taken advantage of this, and they've been fanning the flames of fear and insisting that we cannot return to normal until we have a vaccine. Well, let's say we do have a vaccine. We don't have one for AIDS yet, HIV, and people are dying. Holy cow. Let's see. There are 42 million people, just over 42 million people infected around the world with AIDS right now, with HIV. 1.1 million so far have died of it this year around the world. We've been trying to find a vaccine, a cure, for a long time. It's not happening. The same for the flu. We have a flu vaccine. People take it every year. Does it help? That's hard to say, truthfully. Because you know and I know that people around us have had, they're religious about getting the flu vaccine every year, and some of them still get the flu. And then you and I both know that there are some people who just, forget that. Never had it, never had a problem. And they never have. they never get the flu vaccine, and they never get the flu. No, that's not scientific. But just anecdotally, we know what we see in our lives. We know what's happening in our society. We have graphs of research that show us what's going on every year. So we understand that what we get in the news is partial information and not all of it. And now we learn that 90% of the cases, which have been fanning the flames of panic, weren't even contagious, quite possibly weren't contagious. Wow. And so we shut an economy down. We threw people into unemployment. And as an offshoot of throwing people into unemployment, we have a lot of people who aren't working today who won't work when the opportunity arises for them again. Because they're making more money not working than they would if they worked. And yes, I know, they're making some of them, not all of them, some of them are making decisions which are best for their families. It's better to have the more money than not have the more money. I get that. That's not the issue. The issue is the willingness to go back to work when the work is there. And then when those funds run out and they can't get renewed, you begin to see the reality of that particular situation, and that is that a lot of these people are complaining and pitching a fit that they can't have their money. So the collateral damage done has been amazing. Just amazing. 90% of the people, up to 90% of the people, tested COVID positive. Possibly not even really sick or contagious. They just had it in their systems. But not enough of it to make a difference as far as their health was concerned, really. And because of the positive tests, we've shut everything down. We've done damage to our society. Suicide is up. Drug use is up. Alcohol use is up. Because people are not able to be busy about what they're normally busy about. And those who are not self-starters and able to lead their own lives in positive directions without the set routine of having to get up and go to that job every day, which is what is the dividing line between them and sobriety and sometimes hopelessness. Those people are suffering. And then there are the elderly, especially in New York, where they clearly, their lives were not valued. And some progressive hack decided it was just fine to endanger their lives because they're no longer contributing to his society. That mentality is why I say, watch October. Even though we know now that probably 9 out of 10 cases that we've seen the numbers for, they keep throwing these numbers, more new cases, more new cases, more new cases, to frighten us every night on the news. Now we know that about 9 out of 10 of those cases didn't actually have enough COVID in their system to cross the threshold to make them contagious. And this is why I tell you every day, seek other sources of information and learn to be wise when you're doing your discerning. And that's it for today. God bless. Have a good one. Let's get back together tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.